It's those two assholes, those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That's, you've hit the third rail for sure.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on our on the TRS network.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
In the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Like an Iranian scientist disappearing in a cloud of kosher bullets, this is happening. Episode 178 of the most handsomest and most women-respecting podcast to have ever been recorded. Hi, I'm your host and resident mouth of the South, Bellerophon. And on the mics today, we have the man who bills himself as literally too orthodox to die, Nike. Say hi, sir.
This is a great morning. Praise Christ and hate kikes.
Oh, amaranth to that.
That's
on both
why
counts.
I'm here.
And also, we've got the man who cries himself to sleep because civil rights means we can't have Gundams, Miles Poland.
Google is worse than Fox programming in terms of how often it gets rid of things that actually work and replacing them with crap that doesn't.
Oof.
What,
yeah,
what the hell is
not
this?
Even a,
yeah, what the hell is this interface we're working at? Google Hangouts was perfectly fine, and you flushed it down the toilet.
Yeah, no, you're right. This is absolute like bullshit in comparison to Hangouts. I liked the format; it was fine, and now they just have some like janky mess on my screen right now.
Yeah, the old YouTube layout, phenomenal. A lot of the old Google services, just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what they say, you know, in the tech world, if it ain't broke, let's fix it a bunch of times. All right.
And Frank called it Google Meat Spin.
Yeah, right. Is that like the live, laugh, love of the tech world? If it ain't broke, we're going to go ahead and break it worse.
Yes. That's like the national motto of India, actually.
Right. Yeah, India is what happens when you'd rather have slaves than neighbors.
I mean, I could be amenable to that. But I was going to say, before we get into our panelists, a quick word from our sponsor. This Christmas season, look for the new waifu pillow collection from MyPillow. 3D whores may desert you, but 2D women are a man's best friend. Ask for our special laminated stain-resistant models. Buy today. Author's note, this is a joke, and MyPillow has nothing to do with the show. Like, come on, nigga, these are the jokes.
I was watching the old Chateau Autistes, and I came up on the bit of 2D women are better. And oh boy,
very compelling.
Yeah, exactly. Not only am I being hit with waves of unassailable logic, but also nostalgia.
Yes.
Whatever happened to that fella? Did he just sort of like disappear into the ether of autism?
Nobody knows.
Yeah, he's probably hanging out with some of our guys.
He ascended to a higher plane.
Yeah.
He finally became so autistic. He ascended to the Hyperborean plane. He's in Agartha right now.
He found Hyperborea, yes.
I will say I do look forward to if there's ever like if there's ever an honest to God, like historically accurate good faith deep dive, I guess, on dissident political movements of this era that we read 50 years later. There might be a paragraph or two on Chateau Autiste, and man, good luck explaining that to kids like 40 years from now, 50 years from now. That's gonna be they're gonna want it.
The amount of context you would have to provide, explain like, okay, here's what the Daily Showa is. Okay, now here's what Opie and Anthony was. Okay, here's what terrestrial radio was, and you have to backtrack. Okay, here's why so many autists get involved in dissident movements. Okay, here's why it's funny. You could write a whole book on just that.
Yeah, you could.
It'll be my deathbed manifesto.
Yeah.
Well, presumably also like not only like terrestrial radio, but depending on how gnarly the collapse is, we might have to explain to them like, you know, what electricity was, what a power grid was.
There was a time in human history where we can use fire, in a manner of speaking, to make rocks think.
And then a group of dedicated autistes use those rocks to throw them against big brains. And yes. Now we are here. All right. But yeah, let's get into our table of contents real quick. Since we got three folks on the mic, you know, a lot of folks are traveling for Thanksgiving and all that. You know, we'll have a little bit more elbow room, a little bit more breathing room where we can all kind of, you know, flesh out our stuff a little bit more and not trip over each other quite as often as you might normally. But yeah, Miles, what do you got for us today?
Sure. I have a bit of a hard time limit. So if the winged Borzars arrive, I'll go ahead and duck out. But I have a report on, it's kind of old news, but I figured this has flown under the radar a little bit. DuckDuckGo is probably selling your data.
Oof. That's no bueno.
No.
All right. And yeah, is that your loan topic? Do you have a winner, loser? Anything else on your chest?
I don't have a winner. We're doing the Thanksgiving bit, or we already did. It was a good time. So winner me. Loser, I'm going to do. We talked about this on the upcoming or the previous podcast where we talked about a very unfortunate woman who effed around and found out.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about that a little bit earlier in the week. And yeah, you're scant on detail. So I will admit I didn't listen to that show just so I could kind of get a live react to that. So I'm looking forward to it.
It's horrifying.
I can only imagine. All right. And if I'm not cutting you off, Miles, if you've finished.
Yep, I'm all set.
Nikkei, what you got for us, brother?
We got from Bloomberg, the air runs thin for world's populists. We also have the Jordian going to answer the question, was Trump's killing of the scientists in Iran the beginning of a war?
And yeah, how does that law go? How is it phrased if there's a question in the headline?
Yeah, if the headline is formed as a question, yeah, the answer will be no. So spoiler alert, the answer is no, it's not a war. The show's over.
All right, pack it up, guys.
Good episode.
All right. I mean, I guess we can just keep recording just for the hell of it. Harassment architecture, but like in a podcasting sense, just waste some of their server space. In the antithetical spirit of Thanksgiving, I've got two losers. So my first loser is BLM. And then my second loser is, sorry, Miles, Weebs and the Future of Anime. My topic is.
Yeah, I know that feel. I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, we can both just digitally cry into each other's shoulders, you know, throughout the whole podcast. It'll be all right, Borther. My topic as well, you know, I wanted to delve some into the killing of that Iranian nuclear scientist that, Nikkei brought up earlier. Since you mentioned, Miles, that you do have a hard time limit, why don't you kick us off? You know, what do you want to start us off with?
Sure. So trying to get out from under the thumb of Google's censorship has been a chore. I, at this point, am not even bothering, unless I'm doing dissident stuff, in which case I have totally separate devices. But even then, everything ports back into Google because it's what's easiest. Google has all of the developed architecture. They have all of the services that you would need. So even if a company doesn't we don't sell information to Google, chances are they probably have a Google backend, or they have a Google server, or they have a Google hosting, or Google AdSense, all of which tracks all of your data that it can get its grubby little hands on. So a lot of people will use DuckDuckGo as their go-to search engine in order to keep the prying eyes of Google and the Pajits and the Yids that track all that stuff off of all of their data. Trouble is that DuckDuckGo is probably selling your data to Google. Reason being, just like I said, is that a lot of these services have Google backends or somehow interact with Google in some way, shape, or form, and Google is extremely intrusive. So DuckDuckGo makes the rather bold claim that it doesn't track any of your data. Trouble is that if you've ever been to DuckDuckGo, it has cookies, which is really not that controversial, but you do have to ask where all of that data is going, and chances are it's being sold to Google. And this is the conjecture
being made. Well, if I may.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, if I may, right? Like, if they are selling data, then it has to be useful data, right? It must be tied to some kind of profile, some kind of roughly identifiable information. Maybe not about your name, maybe not about your street address or social security, but I assume, right, it has to be tied at least to your profile. Like, oh, you're a white guy, you're approximately between X and Y ages, you know, you're in this region of the country, you know, et cetera. Or am I off base here?
No, that's exactly what cookies do, and cookies are used to track. Like, cookies are used on sites like eBay and Amazon to track your identity for your shopping cart. Like, if you have like 30 tabs open, it used to be back in the day you had 30 windows open, and you could start searching for things, and you had to add items to a single shopping cart before you checked out. The invention of the cookie, registering usually your IP, would keep track of that and assign your ID to a single instance of a shopping cart on shopping sites. That way you could have tabs or multiple windows open, throw everything in, refresh the page, and then everything would be all caught up. It's a nice convenience feature, but when you start using it for more than single site visits, when things carry over, you could start to build up a profile. And cookies are stored in your browser. By the way, in most browsers, you have an option to clear cookies along with your cache. If you find out you're losing a lot of memory, like on Chrome, which just gobbles up your RAM, go ahead and clear your cache and clear your history. You're going to have to sign into a lot more things, but that's perfectly fine. It helps if it helps Google Chrome run a little bit better. But this is the, I would say, not baseless speculation. This is the fairly reliable speculation, in my opinion, that a gentleman by the name of, let's see, Warner Todd Hudson is making over at Godfather Politics. Now, granted, he does work for a competitor site, but the competitor site is probably also selling data to Google, so pot meat kettle.
I gotcha. So one, you know, for the tech illiterate amongst us, and I'm pointing at myself here mostly, you know, what would an example be of like a Google backend, you know, that you're talking about that DuckDuckGo probably uses?
So a lot of alternative search engines that build themselves as alternatives to Google, you have a search index, and it's just this big list of like search priorities, algorithms, and where when you put like juicy traps into your search engine, where does it point you? Reference to Flash Gets. Phenomenal new video, by the way, if you don't care much for furries, and I don't. But they have a database and an algorithm and a whole set of programs that point you at a certain place when you put certain things into the search engine. All of that programming can be rented or bought or leased or whatever from Google, and a lot of search engines will use those backends because it's already done. You don't have to build your own. You don't have to code something and have to trawl through millions upon millions upon millions of websites to see that, okay, no, the first 50 sites that I'm looking up with the meta tag in HTML, all of these are just dumping dictionary files for certain popular terms, and you got to dig through all the ones to get to the good site. Like, for instance, if you're looking for, again, let's just say you're looking for, like, Christmas gift ideas. So there are a lot of websites out there that in order to get ad revenue, and it's mostly ad revenue, or they're trying to sell you something, they will dump what's called a dictionary file into their meta tag. And the meta tag is what search engines look for. It's sort of the, it's like the topic list on a book. Like, if I'm looking for like a book on cosmology, well, then you have all these books about cosmology and like your Dewey Decimal System, you could search for them. That, the meta tag is where that automated search is looking on websites. And they'll dump an entire dictionary's worth of words into the meta file. And typically what search engines will do is search protocols will do is they will look for the number of instances that thing is mentioned. And and they'll pull that back. So if you really want to sell Christmas gifts, you'll just like put Christmas gifts every third word in your dictionary file. And that tricks the computer into thinking it's especially relevant.
I gotcha. So when you see ads for like SEO, search engine optimization, is this exactly basically what they're driving at?
Yeah, the way Google does it is it's external to the website. So the more relevant something is, they believe that the more often it will be mentioned outside of the site itself. So the way to gain that, like, so for instance, if dissident politics is becoming a popular search, they would find dissident politics sites for you if you search for that based on how often certain dissident politics sites are mentioned outside of the site itself. So if everyone on the internet is talking about the rightstuff.biz, which, by the way, subscribe to the paywall, support our boys doing the good work over at the NJP, you would want to see that mentioned elsewhere on the internet. Like if they're talking about it on like Sallow Forum, or if it's being talked about on open discords, or if it's being talked about on various forums, all of that's going to point to the relevance of the rightstuff.biz, and it's going to put you at the rightstuff.biz on the first page because it's relevant. Now, SEO optimization is all of these people who run SEO optimization sites, like Jonathan Yaniv, the infamous transsexual who likes to show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He ran
That's
a search.
That's the person behind all this, huh?
No, well, he's one guy who runs one search engine optimization.
There's probably tons, I'm sure, but you know, yeah. Just so you know that that guy is the one who wanted like no clothes, swim time at the pool with like little girls.
Yeah. Oh. I'm not saying he's a pedophile, but I'm saying he's a pedophile.
But he's asked to do very pedophilic things.
Yes, exactly. And he really enjoys his work, as we all should enjoy our work. It's good to have a job you enjoy. But anyway, you find a job you love and you never work a day in your life, little boys. So essentially his gimmick was he just had a bunch of like bullcrap free forum, you know, free forum software. Or like WordPress blogs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He had a network where if you optimized your search engine, he would take your search, put your website or whatever you wanted nice things said about you or your business. He would load all of those into his presumably hundreds, if not thousands, of little bullcrap websites. Load that in there, cross-reference all of them to make it seem more relevant to Google. There's no actual traffic going there, but because it looks relevant to Google's algorithm, you get boosted up the SEO, and that's part of SEO optimization, is that you essentially game the system.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
And Google does actually work very hard to circumvent stuff like that.
I gotcha. So with that tech primer out of the way, right? So DuckDuckGo looks like it might not be as privacy centered, you know, as we would hope. You know, do you have any alternative suggestions? What are some things we can do to get around it aside from clearing our cache, clearing our history, like you said? A way we can potentially circumvent it?
Clearing your cache is a way to make your stuff run better on your end. They still have your data. Use a VPN. I use NordVPN. I've been impressed with them. They work very well. ExpressVPN, you get a lot of ads for it. Talk to your guys in your pool party or in your local dissident shitposting group for VPN suggestions. Everyone has an opinion. They're all not expensive. They all go on multiple devices. Maintain OPSEC. Maintain an air gap between your normie profile and your online profile. It all starts with an email. So if you're going to do dissident politics, it may be best to like burn your identity and talk to one or two guys like, hey, I'm coming back as this identity. Completely burn it. Get rid of it. If you have to buy a service that will delete your information from the internet, do it. I did. It works great. Get in touch with a lawyer in case you've lost any. I have old social media accounts that are still somehow online. I need to talk to a lawyer, but because the email service that I use to log in is gone. I have to talk to a lawyer about getting access to those accounts and just deleting everything. That may be worth doing. It's an air gap. Everything starts with an email, and you keep that email separate from your normie email. Like, get a Proton mail, redo everything based on that, and then bring it all back. Now, with a VPN, you get around the IP issue because they can't track your IP. They can track your hardware if they want to. But no one's actually going to do that because they don't care enough. Google doesn't care about dissident politics, about you using their services to crap talk. What they care about is organization. What they care about is you making money through their services.
Right.
I got you. So what I'm hearing is I may need to, after this call, you know, speak with some legal representation about getting my, decade-old K-pop respecting MySpace page taken down. Noted. Yes.
I will say you had the best posts on the Brony forum, Bellerophon. Are you sure you want to take those down?
Look, ML, you know, sacrifice the.
Sacrifices must be made, Nikkei. You know, we all have to. We all have our cross to bear.
Yep. So that's what I would recommend in terms of online security. It can be tough, but I mean, you do what you got to do. Yeah.
Well, so my question here, right, regarding DuckDuckGo, and this is, I don't know the answer to this. This is a sincere, open-ended question. You know, is there the same way perhaps with Black Rifle Coffee Company, right, that it turned out there was some tribal ownership and involvement? You know, is there perhaps some of that going on at DuckDuckGo? Is this just dumb speculation on my part? What's what do you think was driving this? Were they just being cheapskates? Were they potentially not as sincere of an actor from the get-go, or what?
This is the business model of every search engine. It's tough to get around. It's going to be one of those things where if you want to make money, you're selling your data to someone. You're selling your user data to someone. Unless you are, I don't know, like a member of a government or a trillionaire who could just afford to lose money hand over fist maintaining the bandwidth needed for a search engine, you're going to have to find a way to make money somehow. And the easiest way to do that is to build up targeted ad profiles. It's kind of just the way it is. It's like saying, well, is it really like, I can't believe this hot dog seller is selling hot dogs. Like, this is the business model. It's just the way it is. DuckDuckGo is a lot less cavalier about it. They're a lot less intrusive about it. But the fact of the matter is that they are still selling your data. If you want complete privacy, you have to go full Luddite. The other option is you deal with search engines from other countries that are optimized for English search, that don't care about you or your data and have nothing to blackmail you over. So Yandex or any of the various Chinese search engines.
I got you. Yeah, Nikkei, correct me if wrong. I think you mentioned Yandex earlier, right? For the audience, yeah, how do you spell that and how do you find it?
YANDEX.com.
Do keep in mind, though, that you can Mouthy Buddha on YouTube has been doing a wonderful job exposing some of the ClearNet pedophile cases. And you do want to be careful using Yandex. They don't actively de-index naughty stuff that may be potentially illegal.
Yeah, just don't go searching for stuff like that in the first place. For God's sake.
Yeah. The trouble is that a lot of innocuous things, like, for instance, back in the day.
Look, you don't need to be searching for cheese pizza. You know what that image looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, if you need good images of cheese pizza, buy a stock image catalog. But back in the day,
you can go to DuckDuckGo. Okay, yep. They can know that you're going to be hungry, and they're going to give you the Domino's ad, but you're not going to go using their website again, so you don't see that ad.
There you
go. Easy enough.
Easy peasy. Easy peasy, cheesy peasy. But the issue, one of the issues you do run into there is back in the early days of YouTube. I'm sure we're all very aware that WWE is extremely litigious in terms of its defending its copyright. And they always have been. So back in the day, rather than saying like super duper steroid SmackDown 97, they would upload it under like Quiche Recipe 97. And everyone in the wrestling community who wanted to pirate wrestling, I'm being dead serious, wanted to knew that. They all knew that. They all knew the way to get in. They all knew the cipher. So, you know, during certain seasons, you'd look at like, oh, wow, people are really looking for a lot of, you know, quiche recipes. Well, no, they were looking for pro wrestling. And so they do that. Like, for instance, just like you said, cheese pizza. Cheese pizza, it's a food. It's pizza. I'm going to go get pizza with my friends later in the afternoon today. I'm going to have a pepperoni pizza, but that's a different story. But that's exactly the thing. Like, you have an innocuous term that everyone searches for, and everyone within the group knows the cipher, and people outside of the group don't. Like, for instance, we say, and we do it ourselves, Chosenites, Red Sea Pedestrians.
Lampshade.
Lampshades, yes, exactly, stuff like that.
Orchestra and swimming pool enthusiasts.
Exactly, yes.
Pool party.
Mm-hmm.
No, that makes sense. So what I'm hearing is, you know, be wary,
be careful,
even on DuckDuckGo. Mm-hmm. Get a half decent VPN, and you know, just you know, use Yandex when appropriate, and be on the lookout because they don't de-index. How did you say it? Not naughty, potentially illegal
naughty stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah, they are not on top of that. Gotcha. I'm sure they do. They have to do like server maintenance stuff like that to purge a lot of the buildup.
They have family search settings, so you know, yeah. it has a pretty good filter. So especially if you do full blast filter, you can use it safely. Don't get discouraged.
Yeah,
it's better than some like foreign company that can't do jack shit with your data because all their ad buyers are from, you know,
Ukraine. Cheeky,
bleaky, bleen company.
Yeah, they're trying to sell you vodka. I'm assuming that's all that gets sold in Russia, vodka.
Right. That's literally it. The one thing you can purchase.
Well, in which case, that's a product I would be interested in getting advertised about. So, you know, no issues there. Right. Or maybe like anti-radiation, like, you know, oh, hey, comrade, do you live very close to Chernobyl? You know, buy Crazy Jim's anti-radiation pill.
Yeah. Buy Crazy Bill's iodine pills. Goes great with vodka.
Little do they know, it's just like, you know, like hastily rebranded Super Male Vitality.
Comrade Yuri, I am turning blue. Don't worry, it's proof radiation protection works. Radiation is green. Colloidal, you are blue.
Silver.
Yeah, different colors. You are fine.
Comrade Yuri, they're trying to turn amphibians gay. Yes.
Yeah, da. I love
not if here you, in Russia.
If you look up that story, the first story, like Alex Jones turning the frogs gay, the first story, the first thing is like the video song, the video montage, and then it's the story about how literally frogs are becoming hermaphroditic because of chemicals in the water, and then it's nothing but a slew of articles about how crazy Alex Jones is.
It's like, yeah, the only thing that they have to go with that is because they said gay and not like hermaphrodites. Like, big fucking difference.
Yeah,
it sounds gay to me.
Yeah. close enough. We all knew what he meant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we clip that? It sounds gay to me. That would be an excellent drop going forward. And then secondly, I think Dark has said this multiple times, right? But it bears repeating. The arc of history is long, but it bends towards the total vindication of Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah. There's been so many times I just get pissed off at when Alex Jones just proven correct again by the media because everyone denying it. Like, the one that always sticks out in my memory was the Haitian sex slaves from NGO organizations working there. And, you know, people write that off as like, that's crazy. These are like charitable organizations. They're not like selling kids into sex slavery. Well, turns out, I mean, I remember hearing that from Alex Jones back in 2012. And it was like 2016, 2017, where there was like an official report that confirmed all of this.
A Clinton associate, 60 some odd counts, or 30, I forget which. A lot of counts.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah,
it wasn't an accident. It wasn't like one or two times, like, oopsie, you know, sold this kid into sex slavery. It happened a couple dozen times. You know, that's a trend line right there.
Yeah, it wasn't the Amber Alert bullshit where the mom's like, yeah, you need to have little Johnny back by 5 p.m. And dad's like, we're going to go play mini golf until like 10. And then you get an Amber Alert because mom's being a bitch. It wasn't like that. No, there's like, I'll take the tall one, the middle one, and the one on the right for $50. I'll pay you $50 for that slave there, sir.
That's a slave.
That's a fine-looking black boy right there. He'd be a good worker, a good student athlete.
Foghorn Leghorn, you know, confirmed as, like, Clinton child trafficking associate.
Well, the Clintons, they are dirty birds, but they pay well, I say, boy. Boy, I say they pay a lot of money. I ran cocaine to Nicaragua with the Clintons. They are good people. They pay up every time. These Cuban sons of bitches, they'll keep your money for you. They say, I'll pay you next week. The Clintons, they always pay you right away. They don't want to be in anyone's debt there, boy.
I say. Well, anyway, before we get into, you know, potential, like, Looney Tunes copyright infringement,
that one was good enough to, like, get picked up by the YouTube sound recognition.
That was a pretty darn
good impression. Played by Warner Brothers? What?
Yeah, my pillow and Looney Tunes, you know, take down the dissident right in one weird lawsuit.
Nazis hate them. Find out how. Why?
I always knew it would go out this way.
Not with a bang, but a copyright claim from a completely irrelevant company we were doing a bit on.
Yeah, literally not by the bang. Of all the copyright infringement that could be claimed.
But yeah, and then after this, you know, if it does happen, right, we'll just we will go out with a bang, right? Just everybody burn your computers. But before we do, we'll do like a 24-hour stream just playing Beatles music on the loop.
Yeah, Beatles, and Beatles, Michael Jackson, and Elvis. Fuck Sony.
Yes.
Yeah. funny story. I remember hearing this was like 15 years ago. There's a random radio station. I remember hearing a story about this where they were going out of business. And so for the last like 72 hours that they were broadcasting, because I think they were going totally belly up bankrupt is my understanding. They just played on a loop with no advertisements, but just on a loop, Garth Brooks, Thunder Rolls, over and over again. And anyway, the speculation was that it was like the most expensive song royalty that they had in their catalog. And so they were just trying to run up a huge tab before they folded up shop. So, you know, we could do something along those lines.
Nice.
Oh man, I might queue up some Garth after this, to be honest. But anyways, if we've exhausted that, Nikkei, you know, did you want to tag in one of your winners or losers? Introduce that for us.
I didn't want to actually hear the demon story first, or the that it was like demon, yeah. Right?
Sure. Yeah, so this will be a we have a story in four parts. Let me go ahead and copy the link. Actually, copy link. And how do I chat in this thing? Where's the chat?
It's on the right.
Top right corner.
Okay, there we go. The little icon. Chat. God, I. Yeah. I'm turning into such a boomer. This is the worst.
Are you going to do the spin bit? Are you going to do the spin bit where we just hear you breaking your keyboard in real time?
Right. I have several keyboards that have broken over the last several years, so I can just have stun keyboards and just snap them in half. No, I have a really nice mechanical keyboard now. So
keyboard.wav.
So we have a young woman by the name of Kat Reston, and she is resting in peace now, hopefully.
Oof.
And she says, over a picture of a voodoo doll that she has burnt, let people live and have their own religion. If someone is into something different, accept that. Stop saying, no, you come from God. I'm Wiccan, and I always will be. Shut the F up and let me be.
How about we don't?
Yeah, how about we don't? So that was on May 29th. On April 17th, presumably, or no, I'm sorry, March 29th. The next month, a little under a month later, she says, I seen Papa Legba today, and I'm scared. For those of you who don't know, in African hoodoo, which is sort of like this weird bastard mix of African tribal religion and Catholicism, which is not applied correctly at all, because black people.
Yeah.
Papa Legba is the intermediary between the spirits and people. And if you want to talk to the spirits, first you got to talk to Papa Legba. So she's seen Papa Legba today, and she's scared. Then we hear from another gentleman by the name of Terrell Terrell about a day later, or no, I'm sorry, 2 days later. I just want to take a moment to RIP Kat Reston. I just did a reading on her, and I asked Papa Legba, was that him? He said, nah, it was Baron. I'm not sure who that is.
SMH is just shaking my head. It's just the acronym.
Yeah. But I think if I remember correctly, Baron or whoever he's mentioning is the Lord of the Dead in African voodoo. Oh, yeah. Y'all have to be Baron careful Tomedy. What you tap. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the guy. You'll have to be careful what y'all tap into. And yes, you do have to be careful what you tap into.
You
the
can
shit
be
is
careful,
real.
Why not?
Yeah, just don't. Step one, it's a nice handy acronym. D, don't. O,
yeah.
Don't.
Don't. N, don't.
Don't.
And then
T, fucking don't.
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah. Died of mysterious circumstances 2 days after seeing a spirit. So we talk about this all the time in the Godcast. It's real. Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Geez, she was only 19 years old, too.
Yep. Yeah, she leaves behind a kid.
Oof.
But But yeah, I mean, we talked about it briefly, right? Like maybe in kind of joking terms on the Halloween episode, you know, like Ouija boards and the like. You know, yeah, it's a fun party gimmick, I'm sure, right? But like, you know, the downside ain't worth it. You know, don't fuck around and find out with the demon realm.
So yeah. It says she was living in Virginia Beach when she died. She was practicing voodoo. Is this child left behind mixed race?
Probably. Not gonna lie. Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know how many white people just get into voodoo on their own. It's not really our thing.
Well, she said she got into Wicca, so it could just be whatever she found first. I have no idea.
I guess
idea.
It could be adjacent, yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing with Wicca is that it's so poorly defined. Like, you could literally be like, yeah, I really like Harry Potter, I'm a Wiccan, and no one has any grounds to, like, say anything about it.
Yeah.
There's not a Pope of Wiccanism or anything?
Nothing. Surprisingly enough, no.
Hmm. But yeah, I mean, if memory serves, and you know, if somebody's in Virginia right now and I'm misspeaking, you know, I apologize in advance. But if memory serves, I think Virginia Beach, I want to say that's
pretty dumb.
That is a heavily black area, because I vaguely remember over the past like decade, you know, that there would be high level like football recruits from the area, and we all know what that means.
Yes.
Well, that's the old joke. What do you call a white man surrounded by 20 blacks?
Coach.
Yeah. What do you call a white man surrounded by 100 blacks?
Warden.
Yep.
Oh, you haven't heard that one before, Nikkei? Man,
I have not. Like, that's a new one on me. I like it though.
This is like old school sixth grade playground racism.
Yeah.
My favorite brand.
I had plenty of that, but I didn't get all of it. You know.
We gonna learn you, boy. We gonna learn you.
I've been learnt. It's a good thing she didn't see Papa Ligma, because he's known to torture you.
Yeah, exactly. Papa Sugma is even worse.
Oh my god. You never want to fuck around with Sugma.
And you know, Daddy Bofa, don't even get me started.
That's the unholy trinity right there.
But yeah, you know, admittedly, in terms of like voodoo, Wicca, like, and it seems like, right, if she's burning some kind of voodoo doll, if she's burning like a doll in effigy, right, that is more like some of the like, Creole or maybe like Caribbean style, you know, paganism, yeah. At least at first blush, right? Like, but I don't know much more beyond that other than they're big into like sex and blood magic.
Yeah.
You know, can you give us a little primer? You know, to the extent you can, about like what all's involved with this kind of dirty, weird bullshit.
Sure. So the thing to keep in mind with most paganism is that you don't have the law. You have a spirit interacting with an intermediary who then interacts with the people. And this is the case even in more complex, such as Norse paganism, Norse paganism is fairly simple. In something like Roman paganism, where you have a priestly class, you have very liturgical manners of worship. It's whatever the god wants. Sooner or later, the god is he's going to demand it of people, and he's going to get it, or he's going to be pissed. With very primitive African societies, this is exactly what you see. You have a god who wants something, or a spirit who wants something. An intermediary who demands it of the people, and the people fork it over, otherwise they face dire consequences.
So what you're saying is these African spirit deities are in a roundabout way saying, gives me dat.
Literally, yes. That's the whole relationship. These are, needless to say, extremely vulgar spirits. They do not act in the best interests of God. You find a lot of pagan societies sort of collapsing very quickly with the coming of Christianity and converting almost immediately, especially in Europe. This has not been the case in a lot of Asian and African countries. So you do find a lot of these very, very primitive, very malicious spirits. And one of the big things with a lot of these things, they practice a lot of sympathetic magic, throw around a lot of curses, and basically ask their gods to just go around smiting people that they don't like. Am I coming through? Yeah, I'm coming through, Frank.
But yeah, so it's a very So I guess what I'm hearing is, like, you know, much like the people who originated on that continent, you know, it's very, sort of violent base, and, you know, you don't want to be in the same neighborhood as them.
No, you really don't. You find with a lot of what they're practicing, I believe it's called sympathetic magic, where you, this is actually the case. The understanding in medieval Europe is that there is a sort of essence to everything. So if you wanted to, like, everything was sort of a living thing and had its own energy. So if you wanted to combine those energies for, I'm not even sure what, but you would combine the materials and you would make an amalgam of the materials. This is a big part of Johnny Monoxide actually talks about this in the Paranormies on his episode on astrology. And certain energies were reflected in the stars, and in certain alignments, you had extra effects granted to a lot of these extra energies granted, being put into these living things where you could accomplish certain things. I'm not really clear on the details. You're going to want to go back and listen to that episode. But it's this notion.
Do you happen to remember the title of the episode? Episode number for the audience?
It was one on astrology. I know astrology was on the it's on the title card. So if you go back in their archives and you look through astrology, you'll find a really good episode on that. But so it's also this notion that the human body is sort of like a complete piece, and all of the pieces want to sort of get back with each other. And there's a very important spiritual aspect to that. So, for instance, in some of the Greek myths, I believe it was in the Iliad, I think it was, where one of the Trojan heroes, or Greeks, I forget which, was dismembered and had all of his bodies just thrown around. And that was considered an extremely grievous sin because he wouldn't be able to go to the afterlife because he wasn't intact. We see this in Egyptian mythohistory with one of their gods was dismembered, torn apart, and his wife went out and found all the pieces, put him back together except for his penis, and there's some sort of spiritual, she fashioned a penis out of gold and stuck it back on him so he would again be intact.
Wasn't that the premise of that Austin Powers movie Goldmember?
that was referenced. Yeah, he got his wang dipped in gold somehow. It's either torture or an industrial accident, I forget which. But the notion of intactness and the whole person being, you know, a complete entity is very important to a lot of this stuff. And so you, from that, it follows that if you can get some of this person's, like, live part of their body, like, for instance, hair, nails, or something like that, teeth or whatever, and you could sort of make a little simulacrum of the person, and if you do harm to the simulacra, the little doll thing, I'm probably not using that word, the simulacra word correctly, so I'm going to stop. If you can make a little doll thing and do harm to part of the body, like by burning it, like this woman is doing, that harm would then be done to the person. So that's the idea behind. Yeah, that's the idea behind a lot of behind the voodoo dolls.
Yep. So I guess what I'm hearing is
it's plausible that tranny surgery is just a plot by a voodoo priest to create a zombie army.
I very sincerely doubt that, considering most of the stuff. Excuse me. Goodness, I'm having a soda on an empty stomach. That's not a very good idea. Although it's not soda, it's flavored seltzer water. It's wonderful. It tastes just like having fruit described to you. But we meme about, like, oh yeah, you cut your cock off. That's actually not what happens. They actually even more disgustingly turn it inside out and shove it back inside of you.
Yeah, no, it's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about you know, I would prefer to talk about literally anything else. Like, I would damn near rather us read from the Talmud live on air than go through that process in detail.
The Talmud is one of the most aggressively boring things I've ever had the opportunity to read portions of.
Yeah, a lot of
really?
Bullshit.
Yeah, it's like
rambling.
It really is. One of the stories in the Talmud is how to determine what belongs to who based on where it lands, or like what you should do with lost property based on where it is. It's all told in terms of like parables and dialogues. So in one of them, I think it's like, how do you determine, like, cause they had doves for sacrifice and stuff like that. And you would buy doves to sacrifice during the temple period. And so, like, how do you determine where, like, who a dove belongs to? What should I do with it? Well, if you see it, like, on inside of the property of the temple, then you should just go sacrifice it yourself. But if it falls outside of the temple, then you should try to find who it belongs to. And then the story records that some little shit stain says, well, what if it's right on the border? And the rabbi says, just get the fuck out. I've had enough of your shit, Moshe. Leave.
Yeah, no, it's literally just like copy paste of these dialogues that are just annoying. Mm-hmm.
Jews like, trying
you have to
outdo each
why
other.
Why the fuck they wrote this down?
It was a primer for all of their comedies that they wrote in the 20th century.
Mm.
Like all the, you could see the line right from the 12 tribes all the way up to Seinfeld. It's an unbroken line of kvetching.
it's the Talmud. It's a book about nothing.
It's a book about nothing. Perfect.
We're gonna study the Talmud. Bow, 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 bow.
And a rabbi who looks suspiciously like Kramer, you know, he bursts open through the holy of holy doors, you know, and he's throws aside the curtain. Says, Yahweh, I've got a great idea.
You know, Kramer, what is the idea? She's a roasty, Yahweh. A roasty. Oh no, she's a roasty.
What's a roast? Does everybody know
the sandwich? Oh, good times. All right, so what else we got?
Oh, man. Oh, man. Yeah. Go ahead, Nikkei. You got it, man.
Yeah, I want to go into air runs thin for the world's populists. This is a bold claim by Alan Crawford of Bloomberg. I'll just dive straight into it. Poland and Hungary are going for broke. After meeting in Budapest yesterday, Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki and Viktor Orban reiterated their threat to veto $2.2 trillion of European Union spending, even at the risk of losing their share. For Orban and Morawiecki, this isn't about money. It's about the bloc's decision to tie funds, including access to the pandemic rescue package, to democratic standards. Both right-wing nationalist governments are outraged at the EU charges of democratic backsliding. But in holding up the budget in defiance of Brussels and fellow EU leaders, they may find themselves on an unsustainable path. Donald Trump's election defeat isn't the only sign that the populist wave is fading. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is again looking for better ties with the West. While in Brazil, President Jair Bolsonaro is favored candidates all lost in the first round of municipal elections that were a de facto midterm referendum on his rule. In Europe, Dutch far-right leader Thierry Baudet resigned this week amid allegations of anti-Semitism in his party, leaving its rudderless going into the national elections in March. The UK's Brexit-fueled divisive influence on the EU is about to end on December 31st, with or without a trade deal. Brussels is meanwhile reaching out to U.S. President-elect Joe Biden to start anew. All this may just be a temporary reprieve for liberal values, but for now it's 25 against 2. Poland and Hungary are increasingly isolated, and the EU surely feels emboldened to tough it out. It wasn't a very long article, but it's a lot of bold claims about just one thing, this one meeting between the leaders of Poland and Hungary, and then tying it into everything else. Which is tenuous at best.
Yeah. So, out of curiosity, it said they're tying the aid, right, to quote unquote democratic standards. Who, pray tell, who? And I think I know the answer, but you know, for the sake of the audience, who, pray tell, is determining these? Who's setting these standards?
Well, it's the EU internally. Obviously, they got plenty of advisors. But I believe his name is Klaus Schwab. He's made headlines with his recent statements. He's, you know, one of these EU bigwigs.
Or big noses.
Yeah, something
apparently
like that.
Apparently, he's not actually part of the tribe. He just
hangs
German
out
cock.
With them a lot.
Spiritual, so he'll do until the real ones show up, I guess, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it walks like a duck, if it swings a chicken like a duck, if it kvetches like a duck, you know, then it's a duck.
Works for me. But yeah, no, I mean, these are, first of all, it exaggerates the extent to which these people are even far right to begin with, as they always do. But to say that, like, the air runs thin for the world's populists, I think that it's a little bit of wishful thinking on their part.
Oh, yeah. Well, it also assumes that all of these elections were valid, which is completely insane. Like, you're talking about probably not the same sort of shenanigans going here with the Trump election, but you're talking about, like, voter repression, different requirements, taking out actual right-wing populists before they get any sort of power and entrench themselves in a political organization. There's a lot of bullcrap going on.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Yeah, because, I mean, right, as the old logic goes, you know, they wouldn't have to, I forget who I'm paraphrasing, right? Like, they wouldn't need to do propaganda if, you know, if we weren't achieving some kind of effect. And similarly, right, like, if there was no support for this kind of, like, populist politics, then they wouldn't have to worry about, you know, stamping it out before it starts.
Yeah.
Right. Again, it's always important to remember that, like, these governments aren't exactly what we'd consider sufficient in terms of, you know, politics. You know, they're notable for being different from the rest of the European scene to a large extent. But by no means would they consider us, like, these parties would consider our beliefs outside of their purview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, as it's been,
want to stamp it down while it's at that stage.
That's fair. And I mean, also too, like, probably from the view of the writer and the view of the intended audience for that article, right? Like, if you make one legislative iota, if you make it even marginally more difficult to, I don't know, get an abortion, you know, if you make it so you have to have, like, qualified physicians, you know, administering the abortion, if you do anything, anything to inconvenience child sacrifice or transsexualism or, you know, people coming into your country illegally, right? Like, that's, they see goose stepping.
Yeah. That they do.
But yeah, I mean, is this, you know, what's the level of aid that's being talked about here? You know, do you think, are we talking billions, you know, hundreds of millions? Like, you know, is this enough aid in this case to potentially swing the pendulum in your opinion?
Well, I'm not sure about the exact size of the pandemic aid package. The article said the amount of money that they're threatening to withhold from the budget contribution is $2.2 trillion. Which is extremely sizable. I mean, that's really the cards they're playing with, that they've got a lot in their corner. I hope they can actually swing that hard, but that remains to be seen. They really have, yeah, and, you know, I don't know exactly what could be held against them.
Yeah, well, and also just, I'm assuming it's in euros, right? Like, just for a sense of scope, apparently, if memory serves, I think one euro is about like, or it's like 1.2 euros to every dollar. Or do I have that backwards?
I think you have it backwards. It's like a buck and a quarter for every euro.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, you know, so we're talking, you know, 2.2 trillion, you know, plus 25%, right? So I guess about roughly...
dollars.
Oh, never mind. Then I'm just spurking out for no reason.
It's all right.
If you'll pardon me, I'll go pull the vaccines out of my arm so I can, you know, get back to normal and make some half decent content here.
Yeah. I also I've just had my personal resentment, the fact they try to shoehorn the fucking Turk roach into all this. He's irrelevant compared to, like, this larger international scene. I mean, he's been nothing but belligerent to these other countries' governments in terms of diplomacy, to tie them into some sort of, you know, populist coalition is laughable. It makes no sense.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, like, Middle Eastern politics is so vastly different from European politics. Like, the only reason the EU likes Turkey is because they're a source of cheap labor.
That, and, you know, they were a good place to put nukes back in the day, apparently.
We could have done that without bringing them into NATO, though, you know what I mean? Just be a little more sneaky about it next time, you know, JFK.
Yeah.
Subtlety.
Well, and I assume as well, right? Like, I know, Nikkei, you keep up with this more than I do, right? But, you know, I also, you know, Turkey is also, you know, used as basically a source of refugees, you know, to flood into Europe, correct? Like, similar to how we have, like, Mexico and Central America with the United States.
It's been, especially over the past few years, a conduit for migration. And, you know, they've used that as a bargaining chip for concessions from the European Union, just to try to get whatever the fuck they can and still send the refugees out anyway. I mean, they're using them as a weapon. It's weaponized, and they know that nobody wants these fucking people around, and they're willing to just hold that over the heads of these European governments to try to extort them.
Well, to be fair, it's a pretty potent weapon.
Yes, there's, you know, one answer, and it's boat sinking.
And the good news is, all you have to do is sink the first couple, and then they'll stop coming. It's just like the border wall. All you got to do is gun down a couple of them as they're crossing. They'll get the message pretty effing quick, and they'll stop.
You'd hope, at least. But these people aren't the brightest.
We're not talking about Africans. Hispanics can act in their own self-interest.
Well, and to clarify, we're talking about a, you know, legal state-sanctioned government entity doing the gunning, you know, not anybody else.
Self-defense, not, national defense.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about you know, the National Guard or somebody who's duly appointed to use force legally in Minecraft in a book I'm writing.
Like, if there's nothing more fitting for the duty of a Coast Guard, then, I mean, there really isn't. Let's just be honest here. This is the kind of thing that I want my coasts guarded from.
I mean, you joke, right? But it's in the damn name, you know. Yes. Guard the damn coast.
Ah, here's another interesting fun fact I just figured out here. One of the people they name dropped, the Dutch far right leader, is of partial Walloon and Indonesian ancestry. Far right.
I'm not familiar with Walloon. What, can you give me a primer on that?
Oh, that's Belgians.
Gotcha. Well, you know what they say. You know, behind every Jew, right, there's a Belgian.
Something like that. But yes, you know, this Belgian Indonesian is a Dutch far right politician. The name of his party is the Forum for Democracy. You know, sounds very extremist to me.
The People's Democratic Republic of, you know, of keeping immigrants out of Belgium.
Of mixed race politicians.
Well, I don't know. Hopefully he's probably lighter skinned and more tolerable than Ali Alexander. So,
yes. You know, I would buy this picture so here, it would be so. Not as Dravidian.
I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Nope.
But yeah, if we've exhausted that to do a semi-professional pivot, you know, talking about stances on immigration and what have you, you know, one of my two losers that I had for this week, you know, I mentioned was Weebs and the future of anime. And I don't think I dropped it in the chat, but I will do so while I'm talking. We did have recently the foreign minister, or the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I believe is how it's articulated. Toshimitsu Motegi, if I'm even pronouncing that correctly, no bully.
All right.
So he's the country's minister for foreign affairs in Japan. And anyway, so he had a Q&A session, and I went to the original, Japanese, and did the Google Translate bit. And, you know, as far as I can tell, there were some pretty weird, there were some pretty weird translations that didn't quite make sense at certain spots. But in this particular transcript, in this portion, right, this was pretty unambiguous. Motegi said, and I quote, his national vision meant transforming Japan in the 21st century into a diversified, multi-ethnic society by way of mass immigration from all over the world. That's pretty unambiguous, right? And specifically, what he's hoping to get at here, what he's hoping to do to help get a foothold is codifying English as the country's secondary language, which would probably mean, pushing that a lot more in elementary schools and high schools and colleges and what have you, studying English. And for those of you not familiar, the Japanese are at least, especially linguistically, super, super ethnocentric, super ethno supremacist. For example, you guys might have seen Japanese baseball players that have been in the major leagues, for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and they always have a translator when they give their press conferences. And part of the reason is that's purposeful. They don't want to get too used to speaking English, and they go out of their way to try to communicate only in the mother tongue, only in Japanese, unless it's absolutely necessary not to. Just to give you a flavor, right, for how their cultural zeitgeist is. And then secondarily, in addition to making English as the country's second language, he says, in a direct quote, give suffrage to resident foreigners.
Oh, that's the worst thing. If you're going to have cheap labor, you don't give them a say in how the country is run.
Yeah, oh my God. Yes, you're not even a citizen. If you're a resident, that's what it implies. You're just living
you're a foreign national. Yeah, you're a foreign national.
Your allegiance is literally to another country.
Yeah, you should just be over there to spot weld, on the battle mechs or whatever it is they're building over there.
Yeah, whatever the hell they do.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, there was a recent article talking about how Japan's multicultural experiment is working out just fine. They had 10,000 vaguely culturally compatible people come in and be grunt welders in a country of 100 million people.
Yeah,
this is not a multicultural experiment. This is vagrant labor.
Also, yeah, just the stat on that is as of his announcement, right, which was a few days ago, they are 98.1% ethnically Japanese, and the next most populous ethnicity is mainland Chinese. They don't differentiate whether that's Han or Manchu or whatever, but mainland Chinese at just 0.5%. So, literally, it's an ethno state.
They don't care about the Koreans, I know.
My understanding is that bridge of hatred runs two ways.
Yeah, well, no doubt. What the Japanese did to the Koreans. But the Japanese, they basically think Koreans are the Mexicans of Asia.
Well, have they not seen Indonesians?
Apparently, they don't have to it's one of those things, you can't really be racist against a group of people you've never experienced. Not, properly racist.
Right. I gotcha. Well, I don't know. I'm willing to be a cultural ambassador over there, basically an angrier, more D class A Jared Taylor, go over there and teach them how to be properly racist.
Yeah, right. Kenichi San, you must learn to hate the foreigner. What are you doing here? What are you doing? Jared Taylor San.
Here is where Homo erectus made their, made their last stand. And the interbreeding with early man is why, is why you hate these people and why they're ugly. Not allow, make ancestor cry.
Yeah.
Broken branch.
To the larger point here, right? Miles, you were saying, they got a handful of folks in a huge ass country. They got a handful of folks, a few thousand to do a few grunt labor jobs and, you know, fine, right? Like, they handled it just fine because it's 98% homogenous. Who could have guessed?
Yeah, and the right? Japanese like, the Japanese in Japan are aggressively Japanese. Like, they'll let you get away with a lot of stuff, but the breaking point comes fairly quick.
And it's very loud. Yeah. I mean, everyone's seen those protest videos where the nationalists are, like, yelling at tourists, just, the white, the bigger, go home!
Yeah. Buddy, man. I'm just here to visit Akihabara. I'm here to buy an authentic waifu pillow, then I'm getting back on the plane, chill.
Yeah.
You know what, I'm not saying I want this to happen, but just, it would be a funny bit, right? Like, I would be curious how they would deal with, just the mass confusion that would ensue, you know, if there were some black Hebrew Israelites over in Tokyo or something.
That would probably be very novel to them.
But yeah,
you gotta.
It'd end up as some sort of subculture over there, where like Japanese people would start getting in on it just for like fun.
Yeah, well, apparently there are a lot of Japanese Mormons over there. Like, they really like doing the cult bit. But yeah, there's no culture. There's like no cultural bridge between Black Hebrew Israelism and anything going on in Japan. Like, there's nothing. That's like a Shinto priest coming over to New York and, like, waving the stick around and, like, throwing salt everywhere. It's like, what is this nigga doing?
Well, you know, there's not a cultural link between them yet. You know, if Minister Motegi has his way, you know, in 20 years. 20 years are mean.
I want to see what the lore becomes for that. Like, how do you explain that one within the context of Black Hebrew Israelism? Like,
oh, there go Gadda. Oh,
here come a Gadda.
But yeah, so before we shift those too hard. So I did like dig in a little bit to this guy, Toshimitsu Motegi, right? Like, because I was curious, because there's, you know, as we mentioned before, right, like, you know, with the baseball example, you know, kind of refusing to speak English unless they have to, you know, to remain culturally pure. And then Miles, like you were saying, about how they have kind of a relatively low threshold for bullshit, right? Like, kind of upsetting their order, you know, if you're on the streets, if you're visiting, what have you.
Yeah, like, if you're a white tourist in Japan, you will, and you're outside of the touristy areas, like, if you're just chilling, you will be asked what you're doing there by a Japanese cop. Like,
yeah,
almost, and that's guaranteed. Like, they will, like, they're not going to get real antsy with you, but they will stop and talk to you.
I mean, that is totally reasonable. You know, I wish our police had a similar mindset. Yeah. But you know, with that in mind, right? Like, so that's the on the ground, like, proletarian Japanese feeling, right? Like, that's how they feel about outsiders. Mm-hmm. So I was curious, right? Like, how did this guy, where's this guy getting his sentiments from? Motegi, where's he? You know, this is not a popular groundswell. You know, there's, as far as I can tell, there's no, like, you know, huge cry from the grassroots, right, to, like, bring in a bunch of people. I mean, hell, you know, the island's already, like, too crowded as is. You know, who wants a million, 2 million, three, whoever, who wants more people over there, especially outsiders?
Japan can probably actually handle it. The most, like, you find most of their crowding specifically in Tokyo and the outlying regions. A lot of the northern areas and some of the southern areas, they're practically abandoned. Like, there is room for people.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, in a lot of farmland in Japan is actually being overrun by deer because people, like, they don't live there anymore and they don't hunt. So, this isn't one of those, like, we have, like, kudzu in the United States or wild boar in the United States. You know what I mean? It's a problem that's being dealt with, but it's indicative of the fact that a lot of these areas are just straight up abandoned. There was a story, I don't know how long ago it was, but there was an entire train line in Honshu, I think it was, where a single girl, she was the only one who, and all she did was go to and from school. The train line was kept in business just for her. And then after she graduated school and went to college, they shut down the line.
Wow. Imagine that being awesome. Your country. What the hell? This is man. Why don't we get stuff like that?
Right.
Yeah. I'm afraid of a bus or a train line, like, coming through my neighborhood. Cause I know what that means.
It doesn't... the new delivery service.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, like seeing your tax dollars. But seeing your tax dollars at work, if you're a Japanese citizen, right? Like seeing your tax dollars at work for, you know, actually like a member of your own extended family, a member of your community like that. Like, hell yeah. You know, I would not be complaining about that.
I don't know. But, see it as like, oh, that makes sense. You know, she still needs to go to school, so why shut it down? It probably is just second nature to them.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that they're, people like to compare Japan to the United States in terms of their rapid rail transport. First of all, Japan is about the size of California or the entire West Coast, if you prefer. Secondly, like their domestic flight industry is very limited because you can get just about anywhere in a couple of hours. So rail actually makes a lot more sense for them than it does for us with a 3,000-mile wide country and everyone is very far apart.
And water, you know, barriers between some major cities.
Exactly, yeah. But even if you routed around it, like it's less efficient than just flying there. The other thing is that almost none of the Japanese rail is actually profitable. It's all kept in business by the government, which there is an argument to be made about that being a transportation business versus transportation infrastructure. And we could have that discussion, but the comparison is not apt. Like if you're doing business here like you're expected to be profitable, at least in the breach. And, you know, bailouts, it's a separate discussion. But the expectation is that if you're running a transportation business, you do have to remain in business. And I just posted a video sort of showing the difference between rural and urban transportation infrastructure in Japan. It's a bit, but it's funny.
I got you. Oh. Yeah, Frank, do you want to cue that up? How long is it?
It's 2 minutes.
I got you.
Are we on video? It's in Japanese. Are we on video? We're not live streaming. Oh, yeah. Okay, there we are.
There we go.
Inaka is a rural region in Japan.
おばあさんちょっといいですか？
何かね。
もうここで10分も待っていますが、電車がまだ来てません。ここの電車ってどのぐらいの頻度で来るかわかります？
お兄さん、スルメいるかい？
いや、おばあさん、ここの電車がどのぐらいの頻度で来るかわかりますか？
1時間に1回。
1時間に1回ですか？最後の電車いつ来たかわかります？
11分前1本来ちゃったわ。
え、大丈夫。太郎くんがいるかい？
太郎くん？
ここの駅員さんじゃ。その人が電車を呼んでくれるってことですか？
いや、太郎くんは猫だから。太郎くん、こっち、スルメ。
Well, I was going to say I think that certainly gets the point across, right? That even rural Japanese, you know, have access to, you know, this convenience. Also the irony here that it was a skinny white guy who was doing the video for that.
I think he's actually a Hapa, but yeah, he's not at least not fully ethnically Japanese. But yeah, the next bit in the video, if you hadn't cut it off, is where's the rest of the train? Because it was only a car.
Oh, I got you. Man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal the punchline from you, bro.
No, that's all good.
But yeah, so to the point, right, like with what I was driving at earlier with, you know, Minister Motegi, you know, like I was curious, what's his background? Because we talked about, right, like there's not a popular Japanese support for bringing in a whole bunch of randos from all over the third world, right? Because we all know when they talk about immigration, they're not talking about bringing in like highly skilled Swedish engineers. They're not talking about bringing you know, a nuclear scientist from Vermont. You know, they're talking about Indonesians, they're talking about Vietnamese, they're talking about Africans. They're talking about like folks who are going to create an issue. And so anyways, a little bit of, you know, just a little bit about Motegi. So he is Japanese, like fully ethnically. And, you know, he went to University of Tokyo, which is, you know, the most prestigious university they have there. It's typically, they actually covered it really well in the Myth of the 20th Century, talking about Japan Inc., kind of the rise and fall very recently. But that's typically like, it's the hardest, it's the most selective university. It's usually where they pull their intelligentsia from. If you want to do something cool in the tech sector, in the industrial sector, in the governmental sector, that's usually where they pull their talent from. And, And so anyways, afterwards, so he worked briefly for about 3 years in a multinational trading company, Marubeni Corporation. Don't know if I'm saying that right. And thereafter, he got a master's in public policy from Harvard in 1983. Then, most notably, he spent 9 years at McKinsey & Co., a big multinational consultancy firm. And so McKinsey & Co. is basically like a big, I don't know, like a big functionary of Globo Homo. It's a big functionary of Zog. They advise everybody on, they advise everybody from governments to Coca-Cola, to power companies. They do a lot of what they call just like general strategic consultancy, which is vague on purpose. It's most likely, right, like it is most likely a well-paid way to stay connected, to, get in the reins of power and get a check from all of these important like Globo Homo power players.
I know it's not a thing, but I want so badly for there to be a Japanese Alex Jones. Like just make Alex Jones Japanese and like talk about all of the Globo Homo stuff going on in Japan. Like I have to wonder if they call Zog Ozagu. Osaka-sama.
The tomb of the freak and the frogs are gay.
Yeah.
Homo frog.
But I did just look a little bit into McKinsey & Co., right? Like to try to, so to give you a flavor for like how committed they are to the Globo Homo bit, this is on their About Us section. And so they've got, just a little bit of a feed right across, I guess, of their most recent or most popular articles, or most popular posts, I'm sorry, like within their website, eco space. And the titles include, in order from left to right, what will it take to build more black-owned businesses? Women in STEM. To celebrate National Coming Out Day, 5 McKinsey colleagues talk identity and inclusion. A blog post spot from Liz Hilton Siegel, what will it take to create a more inclusive economy? Like, this is...
you sucking less? All these weirdos sucking less?
Well, I certainly try to suck less. That's the flavor of like what we're dealing with. This is McKinsey & Co. is a big consultancy firm that just functions as a huge like Globo Homo diversity functionary arm, to corporate and governmental interests, big and small, on both sides of the pond. And that's where he got indoctrinated. That's where he spent 9 years. That's where he really cut his teeth as a younger man. And then thereafter, that's when he went into Japanese politics in the equivalent of their House of Representatives. So, I was unsurprised, to find out that was his background. And, this is a man who's going against the will of the Japanese people, calling for more foreigners. And, so we might have to kiss our based anime goodbye.
That's kind of already the case. A lot of anime is being either financed directly by Western companies who are just completely gay, or they are having outsized influence on the production of anime. For instance, the guy who made a rather popular anime in recent years said straight up, like, yeah, I had to give the chick a more prominent role to appeal to Western audiences. Luckily, a lot of them are saying, like,
no, you didn't.
Yeah, no, you really didn't. But a lot more studios, thankfully, are saying, like, no, our primary audience is Japan. We're not going for the international audience. If they want to watch, they could buy the rights, but we're not interested in actually catering to them. But Crunchyroll, for some reason, now has a seat at the table on a lot of anime production committees. I don't know why. They don't make any money off of Crunchyroll. Crunchyroll has been terrible for the industry in general. Literally, having Crunchyroll imploding would be better for the industry than any small dollar amounts they get in terms of like rights and merchandising from Crunchyroll. They've been such a cancer. Crunchyroll buys up the rights to a lot of anime. They force a lot of the prices down, and then their digital distribution network is not as profitable as the DVD market in Japan. But because they are said to represent an outsized audience outside of Japan and most of the rest Western world, actually, they get to dictate terms to Japanese companies that are making anime.
I gotcha.
Yeah. And very little of that money actually makes it back to the studio. Like, it's not worth dealing with them. You are literally better off. Like, these companies would be literally better off just either, like, actively not pursuing fan subbers or, like, giving them a slap on the wrist every now and again. If that's how they want to get their anime off. Because collectors will buy merchandise. They will buy Japanese DVDs just to have.
I did not know that. Also, real quick from the chat, Raider 1433, I'm sorry, Raphael 1433 did chime in with something that made me chuckle. The Alex Jones of Japan is busy talking about crypto Koreans.
Interdimensional pedophile Koreans.
Look at the face you shape. You could tell he's Korean.
Oh, man. But yeah, so I know we don't delve into a lot of international news here, right? But that was really, I'd really exhausted what I wanted to say on that was just, you know, this seems to be like a, and folks have remarked on this over the past 2-3 years. It seems like Japan is kind of gearing up for a Globo Homo injection. And, you know, it seems like they're lumbering towards that, you know, in a more formal way. So, you know, you hate to see it happen. I don't want it to happen. But I guess all I have to say to Japan is, you know, hey, welcome to the party.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense that we would be sensitive about our East Aryan friends.
I tell them, kick this guy out of his office, like, as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the, how does that meme go? It's like that screenshot from one of those, Muslim public television. Like, what is the cure for such beliefs? More beatings.
Beatings.
So you're saying we need to throw this man off of a roof? So it seems. So it seems. I looked it up. Apparently, most of those are actually like legit real. The only thing Memory TV has ever gotten in trouble with in terms of its translation is, remember like a bunch of years ago, Iran was talking about like, we're going to force Israel into the ocean or wipe them from the page of history or whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently they like overstated the case or whatever, but I don't care.
Of course Iran, they're going to do that towards Iran.
Yeah. Iran making vain threats and Israel, he's taking it out of context, whatever the hell, you know what I mean? But most of it is actually apparently like legit. Not that people don't make fake ones, but.
Look, has anyone ever became like a more warhawk jingoistic person because of reading like Memories TV translations? I just think they're all funny. I mean, everybody.
Oh yeah, yeah. Incomprehensible levels of base we're approaching here.
Right.
Yeah. Also, real quick, the chat's been fuego the past couple of minutes. Ted No Shed chimes in. That man literally genetically looks like he was born in Korea.
Look at the order on the cast of Korean Seinfeld.
Base. Oh man. Speaking of Iran, they want to
get to fire that? Away. Yeah, let's do it, man. Yeah, you know, in the pre-show chat, I'd kind of given you my angle on it, you know, before we started recording. You know, so why don't you lead off with it?
Sure. And this isn't a very long article. You know, I talked about it earlier. The answer is going to be no. You know, prediction now. Was scientists killing the opening shot of a Trump-led war on Iran? This is from Simon Tisdall in The Guardian. And he writes, the assassination on Friday of Iran's leading nuclear scientist has heightened suspicion that Donald Trump, in cahoots with hardline Israeli and Saudi allies, may be trying to lure the Tehran regime into an all-out confrontation in the dying days of his presidency. Trump's four-year-long Iranian vendetta is approaching a climax, and he still has the power and the means to inflict lasting damage. Speculation that Trump might soon initiate or support some kind of attack on Iran, overt or covert, kinetic or cyber, has swirled across the Middle East in the wake of the last weekend's unprecedented meeting in Saudi Arabia between Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. What the three men discussed remains a closely guarded secret, a fact that has only served to encourage conspiracy claims. In the absence of an official statement, it suggested that they may have agreed to intensify efforts to provoke and weaken the Tehran regime. Any ensuing retaliation by Iran might then potentially be used to justify an attack on its nuclear facilities before Trump leaves office on the 20th of January. The meeting in Neom, a city near the Red Sea, and the possibly deliberate leak revealing it had taken place served another important purpose. By presenting a united anti-Iran front, the participants put the U.S. President-elect Joe Biden on notice that his plans to resume dialogue with Tehran and revive the 2015 nuclear deal abandoned by Trump will face fierce resistance and may have to be rethought. If Iran hits back over the assassination as threatened by its supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, Biden's hopes of claiming the regional situation could be blown apart, along with Iran's nuclear facilities at... Damn, that's a good way to insert it. Along with Iran's nuclear facilities at Natanz and elsewhere. And there is other danger. Even if the regime holds back, loyalist Shia militias in Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon could take matters into their own hands. Quote, "We will strike as thunder at the killers of this oppressed martyr and make them regret their action," Hossein Deghan, a senior military commander, vowed in a tweet. Yet Iran's dilemma is excruciating. If it does retaliate in any obvious way, it could give its enemies the excuse they want and the opportunity they crave to deliver a crushing blow. Iran's leaders have little doubt that Israel, with a probable green light from Washington, was behind the assassination. President Hassan Rouhani expressly blamed, quote, "the usurper Zionist regime." Probably not wrong. Foreign Minister Javad Zarif tweeted that there are, quote, "serious indications of an Israeli role." Quote, "Iran calls on the international community, especially the EU, to end their shameful double standards and condemn this act of state terror." The methods used to kill the scientist Mohsen Farikazadeh, who was gunned down in the streets near Tehran, resembled those used in a spat of similar killings of nuclear experts between 2010 and 2012. That sounds like it's like a disease or something. A spat of gunning down of nuclear scientists that Iran blamed on Israel. In 2018, Netanyahu singled out as Iran's supposed nuclear weapons mastermind. The assassination also recalled last January's lethal ambush of General Qassem Soleimani, the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps commander, which was personally ordered by Trump. While Soleimani was regarded as a national hero, the scientist was also a man of high seniority. For Iran, his death is a body blow. Trump has shown himself ready to use covert means to punish the Iranian regime, which he accuses of secretly developing nuclear weapons and destabilizing the Middle East, claims Iran adamantly denies. The U.S. and Israel are believed to have launched repeated sabotage attacks inside Iran on Trump's watch. Let's see. Was the assassination a one-off designed to damage Iran's nuclear program, or could all of this be a prelude to something more strategically explosive as Trump strives to secure his wished-for legacy as scourge of Iran and savior of Israel? It's blatant honesty right there. Trump certainly needs a win. His Iran policy to date has mostly resulted in his own goals. His, quote, "maximum pressure sanction campaign hurt the Iranian people but left their leaders unbowed. The regime is now closer to acquiring nuclear bomb-making capability than it would have been had Trump not reneged on the nuclear deal." Yet what happens next also depends, up to a point, on Israel and Saudi Arabia. Netanyahu and Prince Mohammed are keen to send a message to Biden that they characterize as appeasement of Iran will not work. If the nuclear deal is to be resurrected, they want loopholes plugged and new elements added. Meanwhile, they say sanctions on Iran should continue. Both men must tread carefully. Netanyahu cannot ignore Biden's views on the impact of expanding hostilities could have on Israel's security. As for the Crown Prince, he would doubtless like to see Iran given a bloody nose. But he too has to ponder the cost of turning Saudi cities and oil terminals into targets. For them, the assassination represents a high-risk gamble. Iran's leaders must now decide to resist the urge or to retaliate or lash out and invite a larger conflict at a moment when the country's sanctions and COVID-hit economy is on its knees. It's a fateful moment for the entire Middle East, full of brooding malevolence. Trump is waiting to pounce. After 4 years of failure, he may be tempted to go out with a bang. So they're going to leave it open-ended here, not a yes or no.
The trouble is, like, Iran being closer than they would have, they have the deal, that's total crap. Iran was never following
they
the deal.
They always say that.
Yeah, Iran was never following the Iran nuclear deal. I've heard from credible sources that the goal is not necessarily to acquire nuclear weapons, but to acquire the ability to make them at a moment's notice, just in case. So they're going to stop just shy of the line, and then once shit hits the fan, then they can go ahead, pound out a couple nukes, and just start flinging them all over the Middle East.
Right.
But, and you could take, like, whether or not they should be able to, that's entirely irrelevant. The fact of the matter is that the article is premised on so much crap. Trump isn't going to war with Iran. He's going to continue the covert. If he's going to do anything, the smart move is what he's been doing for it. Once again, for his own purposes, the smart move is to continue to just behead any sort of efforts they have at sovereignty. So probably next is going to be one of their finance guys, probably one of their oil guys, maybe someone in one of like Khomeini's one of his advisors or something like that, just to let them know every time they catch one of these guys like out and about, they're probably going to whack them once every couple months. That's probably the smart move, just to keep them on their back foot, because at that point you really start eroding Iran's ability to actively engage in conflict. They're very reliant upon a very, very, very competent leader class, and the more you get rid of those people, the less and less capable they become.
I agree. I think that makes the most sense personally.
Yeah, but an outright war, it's not going to happen. First of all, America does not have the stomach. Iran probably could get their hands on ship-sinking missiles, and the United States does not... Am I bleeding? Okay, there we go. The United States does not have the stomach to watch a destroyer sink to the bottom of the Arabian Gulf. We just don't.
It's also a politically inconvenient time. Like, to go out with a bang, as they suggest, wouldn't be so simple. Like, in this hypothetical situation where, you know, Donald Trump declares war, in like all-out war in Iran in his last days, the political blowback would be devastating.
Yeah, something he has been invited to do in Syria, declare all-out war and get troops involved, which he hasn't done. And he's going to go to war now? No, these people are delusional. They think they're dealing with George W. Bush with a wig.
Something like that. I mean, even he didn't start a brand new war, like, on the way out.
Yeah.
It just would be unpopular.
Yeah, this is not your granddaddy's GOP presidency.
Well, and also, too, right, like, it would just be a curious use of resources. Presumably, he's having, like, a Keystone Cops shuffle with his lawyers trying to get some kind of, like, you know, election stoppage going on, some kind of, like, you know, injunctions, some kind of lawsuits going on. Like, you know, why would he take his eyes off that ball, you know, for this?
Yeah, exactly. And it's totally silly.
But yeah, I mean, what do y'all think? I certainly have my opinions. You know, is this, is this just another instance of, you know, Israel trying to keep it, like, maybe just like using their own troops this time instead of using a golem, you know, to try to keep their neighbors unstable and unsophisticated?
It probably would be Israel. I don't doubt that. And, you know, the fact that you can read this in mainstream media also suggests that that's probably true. I mean, for once, if the media puts out anything that would put Israel in a bad light, I have no reason to doubt it. It goes against their apparent interest, in my opinion. You know, and I think a lot of people here would share that opinion.
Yeah.
So, you know, having an Israeli operation take place as opposed to an American one, that also lines up with the Trump is busy with other concerns at the moment. So just giving the green light would be, you know, not too difficult to accomplish.
Well, at least to be more honest that way, it's one of those things. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever. Israel's messing around in the Middle East. Like, okay, have fun.
You're at it again.
Yeah, have fun. They're going to get their balls rocked if they go up against an actually competent enemy. Mm-hmm. Which Iran has been ridiculously hardened. The Israelis get their balls rocked consistently by Hezbollah. The Israeli military is not nearly as competent as people like to portray.
Yeah.
No, the best thing that they put out is basically, you know, the hot IDF, the hot IDF calendars. And listen, we all know the women on those have had a lot of plastic surgery. Don't fall for it.
Yep.
No, that is
not real.
Yeah, Mossad is a fairly competent SIGINT organization. They're not a terribly competent fighting organization. Whenever you hear about, like, oh, our SEALs and our like DevGru, they go to train with Mossad. We're usually training them.
Mm. Right.
And I will say, actually, while we were talking, I was looking up on Haaretz to see if they had any statement on this, right? Any articles? And so I was scanning down. So this Haaretz article, you know, regarding this Iranian incident, they cite in there that, and they don't provide a link, curiously enough, but the New York Times cited three intelligence officials who say Israel, who made no official statement on that gentleman's death, who's, I can't pronounce his last name, that Israel was behind the shooting attack. Israel declined to comment. Unsurprisingly. And then also, you know, the White House, Pentagon, State Department, CIA, they all declined to comment as well. and then they throw in just a little fuck you. Biden's transition team also declined to comment. Very cool, Haaretz. Thanks. But yeah,
what would that matter? We asked the cast of Jack Reacher what they thought about this, and they all declined to comment. We asked the 1995 championship, ANC championship Denver Broncos what they thought about this, and they didn't have anything to say about it.
The cast of Cirque du Soleil?
Yeah.
Curiously silent.
Yeah, curiously silent. That's great.
Cirque du Soleil, you know, an arm of Mossad? Who knows? You know, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
Paranormies, if you do an episode on that, we demand royalties.
I'm not saying I want to check the first of every month. But it'd be nice.
It would be nice.
but yeah, so, and again, like, you know, when I cited that, right, like that, the New York, you know, that phrase, the New York Times cited three intelligence officials who say Israel is behind the shooting attack. You know, this isn't from InfoWars, you know, this is from Haaretz. So,
they should ask me for comment. You know, we asked Nike for comment. He said, by God, it was those fucking Jews. You know it.
But yeah, so what, I mean, granted, this just happened yesterday afternoon, right? So there's not a, and it's also during Thanksgiving. You know, there's still election stuff that's kind of like sucking up a lot of oxygen in the news sphere. You know, so there's not a whole lot out about this, but, you know, just to, you know, blindly speculate, is this, you know, presumably this is Mossad just trying to, you know, worm in a little bit of action, right? Like keep their neighbors unstable while Trump has his eye on another ball. You know, it makes me, you know, if they're this emboldened by it, I wonder, like, between now and January 20th, you know, in what appears to be, you know, the likely event that Biden is sworn in, you know, what other shenanigans might be afoot here in the next couple of weeks?
I don't know, but we'll be here to sit back and watch and do nothing about it.
Many such cases.
Yeah, alas.
Feels bad, man.
Well, like you said, though, you know, Iran is, you know, they're what, 80 million? Is that their population?
I don't know.
You know, like you.
Oh, yeah.
I want
81.8 million.
Oh, awesome. Man, I've got a great memory. I have the best memory, believe me. China says they have better memories. They're liars, folks. They're liars. Nobody has better memories than Bellerophon. but yeah, you know, to your point, right? Like they are, they're one, like very cohesive. You know, they have been hardened, you know, just by conflict and sort of the perennial threat of conflict over the last, what, conservatively 20 years? You could probably more accurately say like 40. But
probably since the Ayatollah Khomeini took over in a CIA backed op.
Yeah, and do you remember, like, you know, what year that took place?
That was in the 70s, 60s or 70s, I forget which.
Yeah. I got you. But
yeah, that was a Carter. That was a Carter administration thing, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Man, what a weird president, man. I will say he does a lot of good, but yeah, that peanut farmer should probably never have been president.
No.
But no. neither.
It's
neither
a testament here nor to the competence of the Democrat machine, is what it is.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, shit. It appears they're about to scam in a, basically like a barely functional blabbering corpse. I'm pretty sure
they give competent at is like trying to steal a damn election, and they might get caught on some of it.
If they'd have stole it for Bernie, people would have actually bought it because Bernie was actually popular. You expect me to believe that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris got more votes than Barack Obama in Detroit, which has notoriously low voter turnout? Come the hell on.
It's
that alone. It's like,
so
no,
this fucking is fake.
Yeah, this is a banana republic. Although Trump, according to the news, a lot of stuff's been happening, and Trump does actually have a clear path to a legitimate challenge of the
They fucking smack him, just because, you know, I want to see this election fraud, like, slap. You know, it's not because I have a vested interest in, you know, more Trump. I don't like seeing fucking shit like this go on.
No, I mean,
it's an insult to my intelligence that this is supposed to be a valid election.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, can we at least, I don't care what goes on, can we at least be honest about it? Like, if we're going to have honest authoritarianism,
exactly.
We just have authoritarianism.
Just admit you stole it.
Yeah, but I have a vested interest. Trump wants to make an ice-breaking nuclear submarine fleet, and that means, oh boy, my company is going to get so much money from that.
True.
Yeah, and you said you were an executive in the C-suite at Lockheed Martin, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty busy guy, but I always make time to shitpost with my internet Nazi friends.
Well, thanks, Miles.
And we appreciate it. It warms our cold goyish hearts.
Yep.
But
I keep telling you, stop saying the N-word. I can get you a security clearance, but no, you're like, no, I stand to my principles. I'm not gonna cook.
Yes.
Yeah. And I would have to get, you know, the windmill of friendship tattoo I have on my forehead removed. And, you know, it's just a whole, it's kind of my
yours
look.
Yours is
now.
A tattoo. Mine's just a birthmark.
Now that is levels of based. I didn't even think were possible. but I mean, to the point, right? Like, just about, like, I find myself, you know, rightly, wrongly, however you want to say it, right? Like, I find myself like remarkably uninvested in the election emotionally. But you know, if Donald does manage to scrape it out, I mean, I will get no small amount of satisfaction knowing that there's actually a good chance some insufferable acquaintances I have, you know, you'll find them in the batch room. So, and I'm, you know,
yeah, there's always that.
Yeah, if only to drive these people one step closer to 41%ing themselves, it's worth it for another 4 years of Don. And the other thing is, like, maybe. I don't buy this notion, like, Joe Biden's the acceleration candidate. No, wrong.
That's not true either.
No, that's completely dumb. Joe Biden is the anti-acceleration candidate. Same deal with Kamala Harris. You think Kamala Harris is a radical? Come on. First of all, she's going to go wherever the votes are. Wherever the votes and the power structure tells her to go, that's where she's going to go. She's a whore for power.
Wherever the bigger dick in charge is.
Exactly. And also, that's also why I'm not real worried about her trying to seize guns, because if she sees something big and black, she's putting it right in her mouth. You know what I mean? But if you want acceleration, Donald Trump is it. Do you really think we wouldn't be deplatformed? Like the Richard Spencers of the world, do you really think we wouldn't have been deplatformed if Hillary had won? Come the hell on, dude.
Yeah,
we would probably have to be, learn Morse code so we could, tap out an end tower in between cells in the gulag right now.
Oh, I'd do it.
Yeah, right. Let's all of us right now have to study the Vietnam cipher that they used in the Vietnam, in the Hanoi hotels.
Yeah. Just
actually.
On the jail cells.
Yeah, we have a message from our guys who are getting out on the outside of the cell. N-I-G. Damn it! Not again!
I was hoping for nighttime raid, but nope. There's another G.
Yeah. Man, funny story. Before they might still do it, but before Boy Scouts and everything got paused up, that was one of the things they would teach you, was that you know, that cipher code. But anyway, neither here nor there.
Yeah, there's a lot of them that you could use. You've got Morse code, which is fairly obvious. Like, no one's going to care about Morse code. Like, CB radio is practically dominated by, like, Alex Jones types. More and more of our guys discovered Baofengs, and they're getting into that. It's not hard to get a ham radio license.
No, but it does make you doxable.
That's true. That is true.
So, you know.
Oh, I'm not woke on that.
Oh, yeah. It becomes a publicly searchable list online. If you have your license, you can find names online, like matching to your call sign, which you do have to repeat legally.
Yep, it's FCC stuff.
Yeah. Mm, well, okay. In which case, the only answer to this to get around a ham radio dox, right, is, we might just have to all go down to the courthouse and legally change our names to something super Orthodox Jewy sounding. You know, this is Shmuley Leibowitz.
Look, I'm not saying the Holocaust didn't happen. I believe it firmly that it did. I'm just saying we probably deserved it, Moshe. If you take a look at what our people were doing in Weimar Republic, you can see why the Krauts would be upset about that.
I don't condone this behavior, but I understand.
Yeah. I mean, cutting the cocks off of the little children and turning them inside out, this is unacceptable.
I mean, we really should have thought better of that one.
Really, I mean, it's one of those things. You always want to. You never go for the second bite at the apple. You're asking for too much. You get greedy. And I think we'd all know a thing or two about greed, wouldn't we, my fellow mensch?
Oh yes.
They would get suspicious. After
all, we run
though.
All of these banks, don't we? I mean, I've got two banks to run this afternoon.
They would get mighty suspicious though when there's a whole lot of shit posting going on during Shabbat. They'd be like, "Wait a minute."
Yeah. Oh no!
Right? This guy's call sign WKKK. He's an Orthodox Jew.
Irony, but the Jews are always the best comedians, Goy.
Don't you know that we do run all the comedy that you see on TV? After all.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I've got a Shabbos Goy who's working the ham radio switch.
He's
for
pressing
me.
My button.
Yeah, I'm just doing the talking, which I find very relaxing. This is rest. This is rest for me. Have you seen the humor is a facet of fascism? Those posts going around?
Oh no, I am not.
It's the funniest thing. Like,
is it like a shit post or people saying this unironically?
People are saying it unironically, but it's not like an article yet. It's like just stupid people on Twitter. Give it time. Vice will write an article about it. How Hitler started in the stand-up comedy club in Weimar, Germany. It turns out that if Hitler had been born in 1985 and he was cracking jokes about this, he would have had his own show on TBS. But TBS wasn't around back then to give failed comedians their own shows, so he started the Third Reich. You know what I mean? At first, they're ironically building gas chambers just for the gag, and then it's like, well, if you already have these things for the joke, why not put the Jews in them? Like, that's literally what these people are saying. That humor is a way to get to fascism.
Oh, right. You know, it's like it goes back to that Tower of Genocide or whatever. Which
yeah,
is
right.
Sounds like a badass like name for a metal album.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, Screwdriver's next album, Tower of Genocide.
Dude, I'm imagining some of like the shitty sitcoms that would come out as a result. Instead of like Three's Company, it's like Three Reichs Company or something along those lines.
Yeah, right.
Did you have anything else, Blairfon?
Oh, yeah. So I think because we're coming up against a hard time stop, right? So we got about 10 minutes, I think, left to round out. You know, if I'm not stepping on anybody else's prep.
Nope.
But yeah, the really the last thing I had was the other loser in my retinue was BLM. So, you know, I guess I've made it no secret, right, that I really like to just peruse the root. ROTT, you know, for content and also just frankly, just sometimes for laughs. just because, and you get these dindus behind the keyboard and just sometimes hilarity accidentally ensues. By the way, if anybody from the root is listening, dude, please pay your editors more. The grammar errors are really, really a pain in the ass.
Oh no, you don't
understand.
It's
not that hard.
African American vernacular English is a perfectly valid way of speaking like a retard. You need to check your privilege.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's right.
And
be better.
But But anyway, so what they're talking about on the route is one of the first couple of things to come up, and this happened yesterday afternoon as well. And so I could be proven wrong. I could be, maybe it's because it's slow news cycle right now during Thanksgiving. People are watching sports ball. There's other stuff going on with the election or whatever to kind of suck the oxygen out. So maybe I'll be proven wrong. But as of right now, there is an incident of a good boy, getting goodified in Ashland, Oregon. And so anyway, the article title reads from the root, white Oregon man accused of fatally shooting black teen over, quote, loud music. And so anyway, that's apparently precisely what happened. We don't really know the details yet. Not a lot has come out. As always, I'm very, if Trayvon was any indication, right, if Mike Brown was any indication, I'm skeptical that that's all there is to the story. But, the spin, the official spin they're putting on it is that there was a gentleman in a hotel. His home had recently burned down. He was there with his son. There is a good boy named Aiden Ellison. So Aiden is my king. So he was a 19-year-old black youth, and he was playing his music a bit loud in the parking lot for the white gentleman, Robert Keegan's taste. And so he came down, according to the article, had an altercation with him, and then needlessly pulled his firearm and shot him in the chest.
Because that's what happened, right? Clearly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, there's more to it. There's more to it than that that we don't know yet, but that's the official spin they're putting on it. And so the reason BLM is my loser is even a few weeks ago, if this had been magically transposed in time to a few weeks ago, right? Like we would have wall-to-wall coverage about white supremacist violence. We would have BLM protesters in Ashland, Oregon, staging a mostly peaceful protest. Blah, 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 on and on and on and on, right? But now that the election is now that part of the process is done, now that the election is basically all over except for the lawsuits, there's no point. Like BLM is no longer useful. Maybe there are, and maybe some listeners, maybe some folks in Oregon closer to the ground can tell me if I'm off base. But at least if Google, if the New York Times is any indication, there is no uproar. There is no like BLM riot over this. There is no like nobody cares anymore because the spigot has been turned off. Like the spigot of, excessive empathy for black teens who get killed over, nonsense.
You that's mean been like, turned off. The spigot of election year gay ops?
Yeah. Well, let's
yeah,
also
that's
not
a better pretend, way to phrase it.
Let's also not pretend that the Black Lives Matter protests, riots, whatever, aren't completely coordinated and rabble roused.
Oh,
for sure. For sure.
Entirely.
And there's actually a very interesting, just off the top of my head, I don't have the article. I don't have the source handy. So apologies for being vague, but I want to say,
do you have an academic study to back that up?
Not at the moment. I'll try to look it up off air. Maybe see if we can't throw it in the show notes, but I think it was Project Veritas, I want to say, that they uncovered that in 2012 and 2013, there are special funds allocated towards journalism outreach. And then sort of like no coincidence, right, that about the same time Trayvon happened. And then after that, we got a lot of media outrage over it. Then shortly afterwards, Ferguson, Baltimore, Mike Brown, those sort of things. And, so there is probably... And I'll have to look it up later. Apologies to the audience for not having, citations handy. They probably have literally turned off the spigot here, right? Like the coordination efforts, the funding to get these folks out in the street, to get them doing their thing, to get them like burning down a Target, that faucet's been turned off. Because this would be, again, a few weeks ago, we would have had Ashland, Oregon probably burning to the ground like Kenosha. But now, nothing. We don't hear anything about it because it's not important anymore. So if any of the, if there are any hate listeners out there, if you support BLM, just remember, like, they don't care about you. They don't care about black lives. You're just a tool. You're a tool of neoliberalism. And, those deaths are only important enough, they're only important when it's temporally convenient when it's around an election time. And, you know, when it can be used to like corral voters in a way the neoliberal order would prefer. You know, so just remember, if you do like BLM, you know, you're just a fucking tool. Nobody cares about this death in the media. They didn't care about you to begin with. But that's really what I wanted to drive at, is this is, you know, for at least 4 years, right? The cicada of BLM is going to go to sleep, is going to burrow underground, right? And then another like 3 or 4 years, it'll probably reemerge if necessary for another election cycle.
Maybe two. You never know. Maybe you don't want to press this big midterm. I mean, it's always just so convenient, isn't it? That all these blacks become violently mobilized when you have to go vote at the end of the year.
You know what the funny thing is, though, is that there's been a massive change away from that. Like, the rioting does not help the Democrat case. In fact, it palpably hurts it. If I was of a more conspiratorial mind, I would be willing to say that all of this BLM Antifa stuff is actually a gay op by the GOP. But we all know that there's
putting
the
a lot of
party.
Like, yeah.
That's an awful lot of highfalutin thinking for the stupid party. This is more of the evil party's milieu.
Also, I just hate them even more if they've like destroyed the lives of like regular working people for just to fucking lose on the voter fraud front. Like, why didn't you steal it harder?
Right. I think they tried to steal it literally as hard as they can and they got caught.
Damn.
Yeah, it's like a lot of the irregularities are like, what were you guys even thinking? You should have just like they should have just been like, no, we have nothing, we have no one, and just groomed the ever living crap out of Kamala to make her more acceptable, or gotten someone who's more amenable to Bernie or what have you. Someone who isn't Joe Biden.
I'm pretty sure they have to take like the electroshock paddles to like restart your heart. I'm pretty sure they just keep that some bitch on ice, like in a casket in the back of a touring van, right? They shock him back to life, you know, feed him full of adrenochrome and probably like, you know, a healthy dose of meth to kickstart him so he can ramble in front of a microphone about corn pop for 20 minutes.
Yeah,
and then they put him back in the cryogenic chamber.
They've got the bolts in his neck, Dr. Frankenstein. They just got to shock him to life with a battery.
Jumpstart him from the beast.
Yeah. They lay him down next to a car. Can we get a jump for our presidential candidate, please? He broke down. You don't want to call AAA. We already used it a couple times this year. They're going to charge. Can we get a jump, please? There's someone there with a Prius trying to jump Joe Biden back into life. Claire.
Emergency roadside candidacy.
Yeah.
I am hoping, though, at some point, though, if we are cursed with a Joe Biden presidency, the only silver lining out of it I can see is maybe he just has this on air, you know, live Alzheimer's breakdown, and he just starts yelling at Stacey Abrams about corn pop and, you know, tries to throttle her on air.
Yeah, like, if he wins, they got to keep him in for at least two and a half years. So what's her name? Kamala Harris. Her taking over, that doesn't count as one of her terms. Right. So she can get nearly 10 years out of it. That's the goal. They got to keep him in there for at least 2 years.
Oh, Lord of mercy.
And they can't just keep him in the bunker the whole time. He's the president of the United States.
Yep.
Dude, that's, I mean, not to black pill, right? But if they could keep, like, RBG's, like, shambling corpse, you know, alive in defiance of nature and nature's God for that long, Yeah, I imagine they're stockpiling foreskins just for that purpose, as we see.
Yeah, they're probably like, Biden's going to be a cakewalk.
With Bader Ginsburg, she had to rely on her clerks. That's about it. With Biden, you're the leader of the free world. You have to be out there. Like,
yeah,
Barack Obama was
statements.
Yeah, Barack Obama was cloistered as a motherfucker, and even he was out there making speeches every other week. You know what I mean? Like, he had to be in the public eye. Now, a lot of that was him, granted, but you can't just like go hide in the, you can't go hide in your basement as president. Maybe they'll try. Who knows?
It's 2020. Crazier shit's happened.
Well, but anyway, I think we've reached a natural stopping point. And also, I know some of us have a hard time limit. We need to peace out here. So, if you'll forgive one more graceless pivot on my behalf, yeah, Miles, would you like to shill anything, you know, in closing words?
Sure. My name is Miles Poland. I'm host of the Godcast. It can be heard every Sunday over at therightstuff.biz. If you go ahead and go to the All Shows tab and click the Godcast, we are right above the Young Whites. We are a Christian theology podcast dedicated to evangelizing the dissident right. If you have any questions about Christianity, European history, the supernatural, or anything like that, questions, comments, concerns, we would love to hear from you. I can be reached at thegodcasttjc@gmail.com, and I am joined by my co-host, the ineffable, unstoppable Super Lutheran.
Awesome. Yeah. And if you guys are looking through the archives, I think it was, what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, Super was kind enough to join us as a guest mic. Lovely episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Nike, what do you have to shill for us or plug?
Listen to the Young Whites. Going to be putting out another episode, recording it today. So be on the lookout for that. OnTheRightStuff.biz. Also check out the American Kulak Project. Link will be in the description. They're doing good work. I am now a fully vested member. Had my interview, went well, very nice, and very important. You can find out more information on a podcast they did on called Aktung Amerikaner. It's on Amerikaner.org. They have more content for you content fiends, so you can check them out there. What else? Commando Store. It's a website made by shit posters from K. You could get an IFAK for cheap today. That's a medical kit. You know, if you take a bullet, this will be everything you need to deal with that. So, you know, if you want to get some shopping done, there's a little plug.
All right. And as always, right, you said that the RSS feed for the Young Whites will be coming in shortly, right? Just as you promised.
No, I did not. I absolutely didn't say that.
No, I'm putting words in your mouth. I'm trying to bait you into some contempt for your own audience. All right. And I guess closing out, I'm Bellerophon. I am not on Twitter, but my based black friend, Bellero Quavius, is on there if you want to catch his melanated and erudite thoughts on happenings. And as always, you know, get behind the paywall or Sven will reduce our Tindy allowance. And I'm so hungry, I can't suffer another cut in my Tindy allowance. So anyways, we appreciate y'all listening. And as always, remember, the real ethno state was the friends we made along the way.